The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, we're going to talk about why red meat should not be in the diet, and how about a way to stop a heart attack fast, a simple nutrient. Also, from more in-depth point of view, we're going to talk about whole-body backscatter X-ray airport security scanners. We've been told, no problem, it's like, 2 minutes flying in an airplane. Oh, no, it's not. You're going to hear from a group of professors of physics and biochemistry, biophysics, University of California, who are going to tell you how dangerous those scanners really are. Also, over a billion people will be losing their homes in the near future due to climate change. And my guest in the second part of our program will be Professor Michael Hudson. We're going to try to make some sense in lay language about what's happening with all these bailouts, what's the likely direction of inflation, and the value of the dollar. So we're going to give you an economic indicator where we're going over the next 24 months. Let's begin. As many of you know, I hope the people will realize how dangerous it is on many different levels to eat red meat. In fact, just this morning I was up in our editing going over the film I've been shooting over the last 3 years about how to be a healthy vegetarian. It's a monster project. I'll probably have to do it in 5 one-hour segments. Just the part we shot in India about the largest vegetarian community in the world, the Hindus, and also in China and Japan, the Buddhist, and the Jains, many other groups. They dwarf the tiny little vegetarian community in the United States. But then we start looking at meat from other points of view. How are the animals fed? How are they slaughtered? What's in their tissue? Parasites, bacteria. Well, here's the latest. This is from the American Journal of Gastroenterology. And it says that red meat is increasing the risk of esophageal cancer. I'll quote this. It says, the results of a major study show that the consumption of red meats increases digestive cancers, and that there's a clear link between red meat consumption and esophageal squamous cell carcinoma and stomach cancer, gastric cardiac cancer lines. And he said that the more you cook the meat at a higher temperature, the more cancer that you can produce. And charcoal broiling, very bad also. And why there's been a dramatic rise in cancer risk. And they studied 500,000 Americans over a 10-year period. And they found that eating meat and also not exercising and increasing your weight what caused an enormous increase in the development of cancer, 79% in this case. So then they talked about the byproducts are multiplying when you cook the cancer. Here's what they say, quote, when meat is cooked at high temperatures using methods such as grilling, frying, or searing, fats at the surface of the meat are chemically altered to become mutagenic compounds known as heterocyclic amines. The study's authors conclude, quote, we found positive associations between red meat intake and esophageal squamous cell carcinoma and also gastric cardiac cancer, unquote. It didn't matter whether the meat was from beef or pork. Now, stomach cancer was diagnosed this year in 20,000 men and women in the United States. 11,000 Americans will die. And yet the natural alternative would be to eat a Mediterranean-style diet, where you focus upon vegetables, fruits, nuts, seeds, legumes, grains, fish and healthy monounsaturated oils like olive oil. Vegetables, the best resource against cancer. And eating them raw and juicing them or steaming them lightly and blanching them is a way to maintain their health. Now, let's say that you have a heart attack that you're having or someone else. Here's some brand new information that you have not heard about before that's important. Cayenne pepper. That's right. Cayenne pepper can actually stop a heart attack in its tracks, and it has enormous power. And it can stop a heart attack in as little as 60 seconds. So I would suggest that everyone keep some cayenne pepper with heat units at 90,000. And it'll be 90,000 HU, which means heat unit. And it has to be that high in order to stop a heart attack. And if you're still conscious or someone's conscious, you mix 1 teaspoon of cayenne powder in a glass of warm water. In effect, you're making a cayenne tea and get the person to drink it. If the person is unconscious, then the recommendation is to use a cayenne tincture or extract, again, of at least 90,000 HU, which is a measurement of the unit of heat, and put a couple of full droppers, I think it's about 20 drops per dropper, underneath their tongue at full strength. And so, just new information, important. Also, we know how important acupuncture is. It's extremely beneficial. Here's another reason that you should consider it. And this was presented at the annual meeting of the Radiological Society of North America. Acupuncture changes the brain's perception and process of pain. And they proved this by using a functional magnetic resonance imaging. And they were able to capture pictures of the brain while patients experienced a pain stimulus with and without acupuncture to determine acupuncture's effect. Quote, until now, the role of acupuncture in the perception and processing of pain has been controversial. This is according to Dr. Thysome, the medical doctor and director of the Department of Diagnostic and Interventional Radiology, Neuroradiology University Hospital in Germany. It says, but this changes all that. So now we know that when you have acupuncture, you're actually, in effect, rewiring how the body perceives pain, and hence, you have less pain. From the environmental segment, the world could heat up by 4 degrees Celsius in the next 40 to 50 years or sooner. Immediate action is needed to hold warming to half that. Quote, this is from Science News. This is mainstream science. And this is a part of several papers, 11 separate scientific papers, and has appeared in the Philosophical Transactions of the Royal Society. And this was a part of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. Quote, there's not much time to reach binding international agreements for limiting greenhouse gas emissions if climate negotiators are going to meet the goal of keeping global average temperatures from climbing to no more than 2 degrees Celsius above those typical for pre-industrial times. Continuing with a business-as-usual approach to energy use into the foreseeable future could cause our temperature to go up by 4 degrees. Such a dramatic temperature increase would trigger extensive recurring droughts in some parts of the world, flood coastlines at sea levels, and drastically alter the type of crops that can survive where lands remain arable. And this was from Oxford University. So, for Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity, and seems like most Republicans and people on the right and major corporate interest, they've been in gross denial of the consequence of global warming. But all the scientists who are not coming with some predetermined bias realize it's real and it's getting worse. Walking slows cognitive decline in Alzheimer's patients and healthy people as well. This is from the University of Pittsburgh, the Department of Radiology. And what they did is they found that when people go out for a good walk, it increases oxygen going to the brain, blood flow going to the brain, And it also slows down the development of cognitive impairment. And that's good. That means you're going to hold on to your memory and learning centers in the brain longer than if you didn't walk. I suggest walking 5 to 6 days a week, and I suggest power walking, which means that it's more vigorous than just casual walking. And two final notes here on our health discussion. Acai extracts show brain health potential. Extracts from acai, blueberries, and strawberries may enhance the neuron housekeeping function and potentially protect the brain as we age. The brain's natural housekeeping mechanism is important and involves the controlled degradation of cells, including the recycling of toxic proteins. This system declines naturally as we age, but new research suggests that berries enhance the process of cleansing and affect detoxifying the brain. Researchers at the USDA Human Nutrition Research Center on Aging at Tufts University in Boston presented these findings at the Society of Neuroscience at their annual meeting. Now, the acai is a berry. It's been used by the native Indian tribes, and it's like a purple grape, and it tastes like a tropical grape. It's real strong, and it's loaded with anthocyanins and pigments that are present in the red wine. And you can find it in a lot of countries, and I suggest people using it on a daily basis. But I know a lot of you are already using it. Excuse me. I know a lot of you using it because I know that you're using some products that contain it, so there's good information on what those berries are doing for your brain. And also, magnesium reduces a sudden heart failure risk for women. This is a study out of Harvard University published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And here's what it says. Increased intakes of magnesium-rich foods are associated with a reduced risk of sudden cardiac death. That's the Brigham and Women's Hospital and Harvard Medical School. The highest dietary intake of magnesium was associated with a 37% reduction in the risk of sudden cardiac death compared to those with the lowest average intake. That's all good. I'm suggesting about 1,000 milligrams of magnesium a day. That can make a big difference. And finally, smoothies may offer higher bioavailability and greater cancer protection. This was an interesting study published in Molecular Nutrition and Food Research. Here's what it says. This is done at the Division of Food Chemistry and Toxicology, University of Kaiserslautern in Germany. Quote, consumption of apple smoothies, that would mean the whole apples just chopped up and thrown in there, may increase the bioavailability. That means how many of the nutrients actually get into your cells. A polyphenols in the colon compared with juice. So in other words, they're saying this new research shows that the polyphenols are going to be better absorbed if you throw the whole apple in than if you just threw the juice in. So that's good. So have your apples. The skin of the apple's good. That's where most of the healing nutrients are, not in the pulp, but in the skin. I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. To welcome all of you, I'm Gary Noll, broadcasting live from our studios in New York City, also streaming video live at progressiveradionetwork.com. If you should miss a program, by all means go to the archives and you can download any show. They're free and non-commercial. And We have a lot of people listening all over the world. In fact, over half the people listening right now live are listening in other countries. So we welcome them. And a lot of young people. I'm getting thousands of emails from young people in their teens and 20s, asking questions, probing. And it's very, very exciting for me to see that there's such a large group of people willing to do something in a proactive way about their health and the health of society. Before we go to our guest in about 10 minutes now, Professor Hudson and I will be setting 15 minutes aside in today's show for your calls on any topic you feel is important. And by the way, tonight I do my overnight show. I do a six-hour show for 25 years on our sister station KPFK in Los Angeles. If you're on the East Coast, it's 3 a.m. to 9 a.m. If you're on the West Coast, it's midnight to 6. And I take on a lot of serious topics. I do a lot of commentaries. Now, the commentaries I'm doing tonight, I'm going to do almost an hour of commentaries. First and foremost, I'm sure you all saw that President Bush was on O'Reilly and Sean Hannity, and almost all of the Fox shows promoting his book. We will be addressing the lies in his book that these hosts should have known were lies and should have challenged him on. They could have challenged him politely, but he was not challenged. And therefore, that's not journalism. That's propaganda. So I'll offer that challenge. Then, how about crisis as an opportunity? What if we could show that there was engineering of a global depression to create a global government? That will be a long commentary, and always done in scholarship with references. And then another topic that is not discussed anywhere in any depth at all, but I will devote at least a half-hour commentary, the transnational homeland security state and the decline of democracy. This is a part of a series I'm doing on when the empire hits home, how we are becoming a totalitarian police state. And who are the biggest backers right now? Strange as it may seem, it's the Democrats. Last night, virtually all the Democrats voted for the food safety bill, and all the Republicans voted against it. And I will bring you up to date on that and how there's just mindlessness. Either A, they're very misinformed, they did not do their homework on something that has enormous implications. If we allow the federal government to dictate this food safety bill as it's written by industry, the mega farms, all organic produce will cease to be available within a year or two in the United States, as soon as it's implemented. And then, what will you say to those Democrats like Chuck Schumer and the others who are just clueless about anything in the real world? All these legislators, they remind me of what it was like in Rome when Caligula sent his horse to be a member of the Senate. This is our Senate today. Buffoons, criminals, the worst of the human condition, and they end up in the most powerful positions. I can't blame them. I can blame us, the Tea Party people and others who allowed these people to be elected. And the Democrats and the Republicans, one's a spitting cobra and the other's a black mamba. Take your choice. They're both poisonous. I wouldn't find five members of the entire Congress that I would consider ethical, moral, and for the people, and uncompromisable. I'm being optimistic when I say five. Now, I'm going to deal with all this on my overnight show, so if you set your alarm and you get up at 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, or 8, you'll be able to hear the commentaries. Now, let's take a look at something that was provided by Professors John Sedat and Professors Elizabeth Blackburn and Mark Schumann. And this is from the University of California, San Francisco, This is a letter to Dr. John Holdren, assistant to the President for Science and Technology. Quote, "Dear Dr. Holdren, we, a number of University of California, San Francisco faculty, are writing to call to your attention our concerns about the potential serious health risks of the recently adopted whole-body backscatter X-ray airport security scanners. This is an urgent situation, as these X-ray scanners are rapidly being implemented as a primary screening step for all air travel passengers." And then it says that our overriding concern is the extent to which the safety of these scanning devices has been adequately demonstrated. This can only be determined by meeting of an impartial panel of experts that would include medical physicists, radiation biologists, at which all the available relevant data is reviewed. An important consideration is that a large fraction of the population will be subject to new X-ray scanners and be at potential risk. Now, here are the red flags. Now, what's important is what I'm going to share with you now has not been shared on any television program in the United States. But I'm talking about just basic, good research. And of course, you're not going to find it on the right, because heaven forbid that that this would interfere with some company associated with the Homeland Security making more profits. Here's what it says. Quote, "The physics of these X-rays is very telling. The X-rays are Compton scattering off outer molecular bonding electrons and thus inelastic, meaning likely breaking bonds. Unlike other scanners, these new devices operate at relatively low beam energies, 28 keV. The majority of their energy is delivered to the skin and the underlying tissue. Thus, while the dose would be safe if it were distributed throughout the volume of the entire body, the dose to the skin may be dangerously high. The X-ray dose from these devices has often been compared in the media to the cosmic ray exposure inherent to airplane travel, or that of a chest X-ray. However, this comparison is very misleading. Both the air travel cosmic ray exposure and the chest X-ray have much higher X-ray energies, and the health consequences are appropriately understood in terms of the whole body volume dose. In contrast, these new airport scanners are largely depositing their energy into the skin and immediate adjacent tissue, and since this is such a small fraction of body weight and volume, possibly by 1 to 2 orders of magnitude, the real dose to the skin is very high. In addition, it appears that real independent safety data do not exist. A search ultimately finding top FDA radiation physicists and staff suggests that the relevant radiation quantity, the flux, photon per unit area and time, because this is a scanning device, has not been characterized. Instead, an indirect test, the air kerma, was made that emphasized the whole body exposure value, and thus it appears that the danger is low when compared to cosmic rays during airplane travel and to a chest X-ray dose. In summary, if the key data, the flux, flux integrated photons per unit values are available, it would be straightforward to accurately model the dose being deposited in the skin and adjacent tissues using available computer modes, which would resolve the potential concerns. Our colleagues at University of California, San Francisco, cancer experts, dermatologists, raise specific important concerns. Here they are. A large population of older travelers, 65 years of age and older, is particularly at risk from the mutagenic effects of the X-ray based on the known biology of melanocyte aging. A fraction of the female population is especially sensitive to mutagenesis provoking radiation leading to breast cancer, notably because these women who have defects in DNA repair mechanisms are particularly prone to cancer. The X-ray mammograms are not performed on them. The dose to breast tissue beneath the skin represents similar risk. Blood, the white blood cells perfusing the skin, is also at risk. The population of immunocompromised individuals, HIV, cancer patients, is likely to be at risk for cancer induction by the skin high dose. The risk of radiation emissions to children and adolescents does not appear to have been fully evaluated. The policy towards pregnant women needs to be defined once the theoretical risks to the fetus are determined. And because the proximity of the testicles to skin, this tissue is at risk for sperm mutagenesis. Have the effects of the radiation on the cornea and thymus been determined? No. Moreover, there are a number of other red flags related to the hardware itself. Because this device can scan a human in a few seconds, the X-ray beam is very intense. Any glitch in power at any point in the hardware, or more importantly in the software, that stops the device could cause an intense radiation dose to a single spot on the skin. Who will oversee problems with overall dose after repair or software problems? The TSA is already complaining about solution limitations and resolution limitations. Who will keep the manufacturers and the TSA from just raising the dose? An easy way to improve signal to dose and signal to noise to get higher resolution. And lastly, given the recent incident, how do we know whether the manufacturer or TSA seeking higher resolution will scan the groin area more slowly, leading to a much higher dose in the groin? After review of the available data we have already obtained, we suggest that additional critical information be obtained with the goal to minimize the potential of health risks. So there you have it. Information you have not heard from the White House. Why would you? They only lie. Congress, they are not incapable of telling the truth about anything ever. The media, oh, heaven forbid, did the New York Times actually do some original investigation? If it did, where did it do it? It's lucky that they only get other journalists who know how to be journalists to drop information in their laps, like Wikipedia. But do they ever actually go out and do their research? They didn't do it on this. They didn't do it on HIV/AIDS. They didn't do it on vaccines. They didn't do it on the synthetic hormone replacement therapy for women. They didn't do it on the autism vaccine connection. They didn't do it on radon emanating from, and a thousand other things. So let's see why they couldn't have come up with this story. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. In a few moments, you're going to get some insights you have not heard in the other media and the talking heads. By the way, the same talking heads who were all wrong, every single one of them, that talked about what they knew about the economy, got it wrong. This man got it right. So we're going to look ahead so you'll know what's coming, where you should put your money, where you should put your life. Not good to be in front of a tsunami. Michael Hudson will tell us what to do in a moment. One quick announcement, and then we go back to our programming. This is our holiday gift package. It's a great special. People upstairs who speak with you all the time on the phone, Diane and Jessica and Mila, they came up with this. Here it is. It's get one ageless answer skin cream, a Heavenly Skin Elixir, that's one you use in the daytime. The Heavenly Skin Foaming Cleanser, that's what you use as your body cleanser for soap. You're also going to get a DVD, Love. Now, all this comes to $200. You're only paying $100. And by the way, I just saw, it was playing in the health food store, Love, and I had a person standing there watching it. And I was getting my juice. And this was this morning, and they kept watching, and there was a professor, Thurman, Uma Thurman's father from Columbia, who was in it. And he said something interesting. And she turned to me. She didn't know who I was. She turned to me and she said, wow, I've never heard anyone say what he just said. And I said, what did he say? She said, I've taught at Columbia for all these decades, and Columbia University does not teach students how to think or how to be good people. They teach them how to succeed. And then he talked about what was lost when you teach the wrong lessons. Well, that was only one of the brilliant minds in the film Love. Had she stuck around, she would have heard Professor Gongadin and one of the great, great minds in all of philosophy. I met Goswami and Henry Grayson and Joyce Hawks and Irvin Laszlo, who we filmed in Italy, and Rabbi Michael Lerner and Bruce Lipton and Susan McNeil and Judy Orloff and Peter Resnick. He's wonderful. And Elizabeth Schmidt and Harold Shinskis and Stuart Savatsky. I mean, you're talking about 20 of the greatest minds on the planet, and all of it's about love. It's an hour and a half long, and and we did the premiere here in New York earlier this year at the Ethical Culture Center. It was a big success and got a lot of positive feedback. It's very insightful. It's one of those ooh-ah films, so you're getting that also. Now, for those of you who didn't know about the Ageless Answer, this is the big 4-ounce one. This lasts about 3 months. And in here, I have the ingredients that are designed to improve moisture and hydration, reduce an appearance of fine lines, augment firmness and smoothness, increase cell turnover, protect from free radical damage, and soothe and heal. And I don't know any other product that does that. Now, if you see, now I'm in a room here with no makeup and 4 bright lights. These are 300-watt lights. You get up close to someone with a high-resolution camera, you can see everything. Nothing's hidden. You see my skin, it's as smooth as silk. And getting younger. I mean, not a line, no fine lines, nothing. Because I use first my diet, and always with the reds and the greens, that cause an enormous amount of positive cell influence. But then every night, I put on my Ageless Answer. There's no grease, there's no oil. It blends right in. But what makes mine different? Read the ingredient of any of the facial creams out there, and what do you get? I don't care if you paid $1,000 for something from Japan on Rodeo Drive. You're not going to get this. I start off by growing the ingredients myself down on a 1,200-acre farm in southern Texas in the Rio Grande. There's wonderful natural irrigation that comes from a lot of rain in that particular area. And I hand plant only the finest aloe. There are many different varieties of aloe. But there's one called Barbadandesis, and that is the best. And I grow it. And then after 3 years, we hand cut the leaf, take it into a plant right there on the ranch, and wash it. And then we press out the whole leaf because there are nutrients in the leaf, not just the gel. And then we add in an herbal infusion of purified water. Then I add Siberian ginseng, the Eleutherococcus sinicosus extract, purple carrot extract, red clover, isoflavon extract, soy, and what is called a zimbizine fermentin, which is again a extract, shiitake mushroom extract, maitake mushroom extract, and then meadow foam, seed oil, and vegetable glycerin, and a red marine algae, and rose hips, and rose hip oil, and then Chardonnay, grape seed extract, and ascorbyl vitamin C, which is a fat-soluble vitamin C, and then soybean lipid extract, and then a bio oil from ceramide, the leaf, and many other things. Coenzyme Q10, borage seed oil, evening primrose oil, retinol palmitate, beta-glucan, lycopene. It's all in here. And then a natural fragrance of French vanilla. And you put it on the dry skin. You got problems on your hands, your neck, your knees, your feet. That's where you put it on. And then watch in about a month. In fact, I suggest people do this. take a close-up picture in bright light of your face on day one. And then day 30 and day 60 and day 90, take another picture and then compare them. You can do it right on your camera and see for yourself, especially where you've got dry skin, cracked skin, damaged skin, sun-damaged skin. See the difference. And if you can find any better skin product in the world, then buy it. But I don't believe there is a skin product that exists that comes near it. And you can't get any of those you see on television because they're made cheaply. They're made cheaply so they can sell them and get mass market. They don't go through all this under rabbinical supervision and doing it all organic. They don't do that. They'd have to charge an astronomical amount for their product, and they'd price themselves out of their own market. So they'll have some one little ingredient, and the rest of it's synthetic. You don't need that. So that's the nighttime cream. And then the elixirs, which you put on the daytime, that's your natural moisturizer. Really good for men and women. And then finally the soap. And you get a lot of soap out of this soap. And it's all based upon the natural surfactants. And I use the best things you wouldn't know about. Jabosilio berries and coconut amino acids that leave the skin soft and condition and tone with that afterfeel. And it's hydrating, and it has a mild beta-hydroxy acid from willow bark to help get rid of the skin's unwanted surface cells that clog pores and cause blemishes. And I've got the microcluster electrolyzed water, the whole leaf aloe concentrate with oat, nettle, and horsetail extracts, arginine. I've got what else I have in there? Well, I've got the essential oil fragrances. Anyhow, these are three great products and the film love, and it's all for you for half price. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. In studio, Valerie Van Cleve. Hi, Valerie.
Hi, Gary.
How are you coming upstairs?
Oh, it's going well. Sending off more film to the festivals.
Good. By the way, just to let everyone know, Death by Medicine is done. It's finished. But because it was judged by independent people who came in and reviewed it as being of Academy Award quality, in order to see if we can get it into a broader medium, we're holding off doing anything with it until we can show it for a week in New York and a week in L.A., see if it qualifies. It's really good. I believe it has the capacity to shift the paradigm if there's enough people who see it. That's why we're working on a whole program. It'll take us about 6 months just on the program. Now, the film took 4 years, and it's done. I'm very excited by that. Now we're working on Poverty, Inc.
Yes, we are.
And Greed Street, all about Wall Street. We're going to need a driver this Saturday and this Sunday, because we're going to go down to Camden, New Jersey, which is having a rough time. A lot of crime, a lot of poverty. And I want to spend the entire day speaking with people. If anyone in this audience lives down there, please give Valerie a call. We'd like to interview you. But we're also interviewing some other people.
Yes, we are. And we're looking for people who have been affected by this economic crisis we're facing, that have lost their jobs, that have lost their homes, that have been foreclosed on, that are facing bankruptcy, businesses that have gone out of business. We're looking for students who aren't able to finish their education, who aren't able to find jobs after they have finished their educations, people who have lost their pensions, people who have really been affected by what's happening. And we need to talk to you and have you come to our studio on Broadway and be videotaped and tell your story. People need to hear these stories. And if you yourself haven't been affected, I'm sure you know someone else who has out there. So please get a hold of them and have them call me, Valerie, at 646-926-5441. That's Valerie at 646-926-5441. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Valerie. And drivers also, because we have to take our full crew out. A car we could fit if we had two cars or a van. We're going to be spending the day there. And then I'm going to go up and film Gerald Salante in, got to get him online, get him ready to be filmed, and also Chris Hedges. We have a lot of people still to film based upon the ethics. I'm taking a different approach. I'm looking at how did we get poor, not just what happens when you are poor. And I don't believe that we have begun to show what's really behind it. You have to put together the picture, and you have to show the hedge funds and equity partnerships and the Wall Street firms they work with to get the bridge capital to indebtedness. Okay, thank you. Let's now go over to our guest, standing by, Michael Hudson. Dr. Michael Hudson is one of our nation's most important economists and Wall Street financial analysts. He is currently the president of the Institute for the Study of Long-Term Economic Trends, and he has served as an advisor to the White House, State Department, Defense Departments at the Hudson Institute, in addition to the United Nations Institute, where he became a specialist in global economics. And he's written several important books and papers, including Superimperialism and Global Fracture. His website's michael-hudson.com. Nice to have you with us today.
Thanks. It's actually michael-hudson.com, but hyphen, not the dash.
Now, I'd like to ask you to go into three areas. The first, we're told in this country that the stimulus package, that the current stimulus package of $600 billion, which now I'm told will be $900 billion, is necessary to make these to make the financial institutions more solid, and therefore they'll continue to loan money. But they haven't done any of this up to this point, so I want to know what suddenly is going to change to allow that money to be properly used instead of using it in other ways that would be more beneficial. Secondly, why can't countries that are having financial issues, and we know that Portugal is going to go under and have to be bailed out. We know Spain is going to go under, and Spain's the seventh largest economy in the world, so it's not a little country like Portugal or Ireland, as in comparison, you're looking at $1 trillion. Then we've got France and England, and England's got a monster debt, well over $1.2 trillion. So if you took all the countries currently in crisis that would have to be bailed out, you're looking at about $3.5 to $4 trillion. And yet that money, principally, will be going back to the banks or the institutions that caused the problem in the first place. And at the same time, the individuals are being asked to make sacrifices in their social programs, school lunch programs, schools, medical, and everything else. They are punished, yet the companies and banks that put them in trouble are rewarded. I don't understand the logic of that, and I don't understand why they can't simply say, sorry, we're going to default, we're going out of the European Union, we're going back to our own currency, and we're going to do what Argentina did. Maybe it will work, maybe it's stupid, but I'd like you to address it. And finally, in the United States, we've been talking about the fear of inflation. Now, I see the cost of money is 0.2%, so it's in effect zero. I don't see the inflation there. But when you take a look at the price from a year ago, food is up 24%. Gasoline is up. And airline tickets are up. So we do have inflation in some parts of our society that are affecting the average person, but not where it's affecting the banks or people dealing with money. Could you address what you see as the short-term and long-term, long-term meaning in the next 24 months, the likely outcome of our financial predicament in the United States? Go ahead. The form is yours.
Well, the problem that you're having is with the $4 trillion that's owed that is far in excess of what can be paid. And if it's in excess of what the economy can earn to pay, then the Federal Reserve is saying, well, we have a solution. We will give the banks enough money to lend the people, the debtors, to lend them enough money to repay us. So if you can just lend homeowners more money, they can afford to keep current on their debts. if you can lend enough more to credit card holders, they will use their money to repay the credit cards each month. The problem is that there's so much real estate and negative equity in the United States that the banks aren't lending. So all of this money in practice that the Fed has created, the $600 to $900 billion that you mentioned, has actually been lent abroad to China, to Brazil, Russia, India, Malaysia, South America. And the money has not been going here. It's been going basically to force up the price of foreign currencies by buying foreign stocks, buying assets. A lot of money has gone into commodity speculation, which is largely why grain prices and food prices are going up. And so the Fed has said, okay, we understand that the economy can't pay. The important thing is for the banks to make enough money that they don't go under for all the bad loans. If we can just make them make two more years of bad loans, we'll get through the next election, and we'll just keep adding all of this money that we're liquidity we're creating onto the existing debt. And the hope is, according to the Federal Reserve, that the banks will somehow lend up enough money at low interest rates to mortgage borrowers that a given rent can carry a higher debt, and somehow this is going to reflate housing prices. The Federal Reserve says that people are not paying enough money for houses right now. The average American's only paying 40% for housing. If you can make the Americans pay up to 60% for housing and maybe and another 20% on interest, then this will enable the banks to solve the problem. The key to the Fed is that their constituency is the banks. They want to solve the banks' problem, which is how to get more and more money paid, not how to solve the economy's problem. And solving the banks' problem takes so much money in debt service, especially now that you mentioned banks are able to borrow from the Fed at 0.2%, they're charging 100 times that. They're charging not 2%, but 29% on credit cards. They're making a huge rake-off for all this and the making money. So, and the money that they take leaves less in the pockets of consumers to actually spend on goods and services. So more and more money goes for debt payment. The result is debt deflation of normal prices, what people buy. Even though right now there's a little jump because of people buying after Thanksgiving, the fact is that most people have so little to spend after they pay for their housing and after they pay for their debt service that you can have deflation in the overall U.S. economy. And what's being inflated are stock and bond prices. When interest rates go down, that means that a bond with that pays a given percentage point actually goes up in price, and you've had the largest bond rally in history over the last few years with interest rates going down to almost nothing. That makes an almost infinitely high price for bonds. You've had a big stock market rally, but you've had people's income going down. Their disposable income has gone down even more than their other income because they don't have much to spend on goods and services. So you have the price of necessities going up, food, oil, as you mentioned, things that Wall Street are speculating in is going up, and that squeezes people for just about everything else, and I suspect that most of your listeners are having trouble making ends meet, so you have asset price inflation and debt deflation for normal prices.
What do you see the outcome for the dollar value in the next 2 years?
Well, since all this credit that the Fed is creating is going abroad, this is pushing up foreign currencies against the dollar. So there's a very large speculation against the dollar, and because there's speculation against the dollar in the markets obviously believe that the dollar is going down. That's why Treasury bond, long-term bonds, are actually going up in yield. The Fed's thought that if it floods the market with liquidity, this is going going to lower the long-term interest rates, but actually it's raised the long-term interest rates because foreigners and American money managers are just dumping the dollar. Almost all of Wall Street and financial centers abroad can see that the solution is not going to work, and they're dumping the dollar, they're dumping long-term bonds, and they expect that U.S. prosperity is going to get weaker and weaker, and people are going to get poorer and poorer, and that's going to be how the United States solves its trade deficit, by people simply not being able to buy foreign exports very much anymore.
So you don't see the dollar gaining in strength over the next 2 years?
No, although the euro is in its own financial problems right now. Other weak currencies may go down, and the euro has always been tied very closely to the dollar, but the Asian currencies are going up, the Latin American currencies are going up, and currencies apart from the euro and the dollar are rising.
And where do you see gold going?
You really can't tell. That is a political decision, not an economic decision. It depends on whether other countries are going to ask for their gold back from the Federal Reserve of New York, where they keep it in the basement, and whether they decide that they want to go to gold as a backing or not. And they obviously haven't made any big decision on that yet.
Okay. I see a lot of middle class working and Americans, and middle class who are not working getting hit. And you're talking about almost 200 million people, two-thirds of the American population, if you add children in, who are dependent upon their families, being at or near, slightly above, slightly below, or at the poverty line. I do not see their circumstances improving, and I see at some point even the most complacent or the most melancholy beginning to rally up and be angry, much as they are in Europe. Your thoughts?
I wish they were getting angry, but they're not. In Europe, for instance, the country that's most seriously affected is Latvia. You've had the GDP, its national income, fall by 25% in the last few years, and wages fall by 30%. There's no jobs for them. So 12% of Latvia's population emigrates, and that's about one-third of its working-age population. Now, obviously, a third of the American population can't emigrate, but the neoliberals, the austerity party in Latvia, has essentially made the election last October over ethnic issues and non-economic issues. So as long as the people pushing austerity can make the election by over non-economic issues, immigration issues, race issues, ethnic issues, political issues that don't have anything to do with economics, they can distract voters. So the voters will rise up over, let's say, Mexican immigrants or drugs or education. But economic policy in America is bipartisan. Both the Republicans and Democrats agree. And you have to lower living standards by another 20%.
If you lower American living standards by 20% and the people are already adversely affected, you will get them going to the streets at that point, but not before.
They may be living on the streets.
Well, even those who are unemployed today and not living in a home still have not chosen to take to the streets to protest. Final comment. When you look at how many people we have in government jobs that are really not essential to helping any governmental agency do its work, in fact, I've looked at the federal, state, and local employment, and I'm seeing massive, massive waste. And I think it's at some point we should just start, the public should focus on the fact that we are subsidizing a lot of worthless work. And maybe that those people who think they're good for life and can do anything without being held accountable, the bureaucrats, I think at some point the American public should realize what kind of game they've been playing. Your thoughts?
I wouldn't want to say that waste is only in the government. I think there's much more waste in the private sector. There's a lot of waste in the nonprofit sector, in universities. I don't think the government has any more waste than, say, the banking system, the financial system, the healthcare system, the insurance industry. I think waste is all through the economy, and there's a lot more overhead in the economy, in the financial, insurance, and real estate sector that's unnecessary, than there is in the government.
Okay. Michael Hudson, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Gary.
Dr. Michael Hudson, who comes in from time to time to get his perspectives. We're coming up to the near end of this program for our listeners on WMYE and all the other stations. We thank you. And we have another program this afternoon. We're going to take on a really interesting topic. But you're going to have to tune in at 3 o'clock at the Progressive Radio Network to hear what it is. It's going to be one of those ones that catches your attention and holds it. And then for those of you who are able to get up early in the morning or stay up late at night, if you're on the West Coast, 6-hour show I do every Wednesday morning. You can listen to it by going to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. And finally, just this thought. People everywhere throughout the world are suffering. The principal reason they're suffering is because we've shifted away from economies that are built upon local infrastructure and supporting that, making something, building something, and marketing something, whatever it may be, locally and then wherever they can sell their product. People want to make money off money, and that gets them into gambling and high risk. That's Wall Street. But Wall Street hasn't been responsible and have taken the consequences of their action. And now we see this in Europe, Ireland, Spain. My suggestion, don't give another penny to any bank. Default. And let them suck up the losses. Have a nice day.
No rest, don't know how I work all day. When will I learn? Memories get in the way. I walk around, I can't hear a sound, folks talking loud, but I don't see at all. I gotta get away, gotta get away. I don't.
The Gary Knoll Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee.
I guess I'll find love, peace of mind some other time, but I still have today. I gotta get away, gotta get away. I don't.